This is the Succeed Against the Odds podcast. My name is Francesca Anastasi, also known as Sabea. I'm a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm your host and mentor. And each week we bring you an inspiring person, an expert, or message to help you ignite and unleash your potential. Welcome back to another episode of the Succeed Against the Odds show. Today, my guest is Joanna Intara. Welcome, Joanna.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here.
Joanna, you are a licensed psychotherapist, the intimacy genius, empowering successful parents and couples to thrive in relationships with soul, medicine woman for the soul, spiritual teacher, and speaker. My goodness, you do so much. Can you expand for our audience and give us a little bit more in-depth picture of what that means?
Absolutely. You know, I never was one of those healer people to niche myself into a box. And what I've really realized is, you know, I combine the worlds of the interpersonal world when it comes to relationship. And then I'm also really deeply trained in how to work with trauma and have extensive training in also spirituality with over 30 years of really intensive practice in lots of different traditions, Native American, shamanism, Theravada Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, Judaism, Catholicism, Hinduism. So I've studied all those traditions really deeply. My particular love is working with those on the relationship path who really want to have soul-satisfying sex, love, and closeness, and who really want to shift emotional disconnection into that, is that it really is a journey of both the interpersonal, it's a journey of the spiritual, and it's also a journey of clearing the traumas that block people from being able to truly embody the ability to really have those things that they want. And so the things that you just read are expressions of how I share, you know, my medicines with people. Sometimes it's more spiritual work, oftentimes it's trauma work. Sometimes when the trauma work clears and there's a lot of interpersonal integration. And I think many of us know that the path of relationship requires some dabbling in all three of those, very often beyond dabbling, like a lot of depth, because you know, let's face it, like when we do relationship, nobody gives us a manual of how to do it. And most of us have the programming that we got from our conditioning and our lineages. And it's not an easy path to walk if you want to do it consciously, but that's my mission. That's what I'm here to do. And I would love to, you know, really reach 350,000 couples, which is about 700,000 people, so that we can shift the population in the direction of more conscious, intimate, connected partnership. Because when you have that, the family unit functions well, the individuals in those partnerships function well, work functions better, and the ripple effect on out to society is tremendous. So I'm just doing my work and being of service in all the ways that I can be with the precious time that I have here as a human on this earth, given these very crazy and uncertain times that we all live in. So that's a little more depth.
What led you to get into this area?
Really great question. So I experienced multiple dark night of the soul initiations into my deeper work. I think it started when I was 9. I almost drowned in the ocean when I was 12. And then I almost ended my life when I was, I think, almost 13. So in the scope of about 3 years, I had such deep, dark initiations into discovering what my true needs were and my true needs to evolve if I was going to really, you know, flourish as a human being in this life. And oftentimes those initiations are really painful and difficult. I started sitting with people and just listening to people in a counseling type of situation when I was 13. So I've been at this for, you know, 30 something years and really can't imagine doing anything else or ever retiring. Also, people are like, are you going to retire? No, I don't think so. Like, retiring to what? Like, this is my calling. And I know for some people, this work is like a vocation or a profession or a job, but it's so in alignment with my soul that this is what I have to do. So, you know, from there, I kept on doing different types of experiences, and I've worked with almost every kind of population and really come home to my love of working with the couple's journey in all the ways that have to do with sex and love and closeness and dealing with the intergenerational ghosts that can sometimes come up and and haunt us and make us go, God, I don't know if I can do this, or I don't know if I want to do this, or I don't know how to do this. That's really where my intimacy expertise and alchemy really comes in, because you can give me whatever pile of whatever that you're going through, and it's my joy to help you turn that into, you know, soul satisfying love, really.
What is the most common issue that a couple seems to have when they come to you? What is the most common thing that you see happening over and over from one couple to the next?
That is such an important question. And if you're a couple or somebody in relationship listening to this, I can imagine that you'll resonate, which is that the number one trouble with every couple I've ever worked with, including, you know, looking at my own marriage and relationship of 17 years, is the issue of emotional disconnection. Once that honeymoon period is over, if there is one, which for some people there isn't, then the rose-colored glasses come off. And the concoction of love hormones, serotonin, testosterone, cortisol, you know, it's the love chemicals. They're actually said to be more powerful than heroin. That when we come off of that cocktail and our brains can literally only sustain it for 18 months, then a process of disillusionment starts to happen. You're not who I thought you were. Oh, I didn't see this before. I see it now. Maybe you're not my person. And the couple are confronted with the beginnings of their unique power struggles. And there's a window there. A lot of people, you know, we haven't been taught how to dissolve disconnection, how to dissolve challenging things that come up. And that's where a lot of people naturally and understandably go, well, this is not the person for me. And then they go and they repeat the cycle with somebody else. And then you see it in Hollywood all the time. But the truth is no one has ever really taught people how to consciously dissolve those power struggles, how to decode them for what they are really asking us to do. And what they're asking us to do is to truly commit to what our deeper work is, to commit to our deeper growing work, evolutionary work in partnership, and to then learn and develop and cultivate the resources on how to actually do that.
Okay, so there's that 18-month period with everything is, we see everything through rose-colored glasses, everything is wonderful, we bypass any red flag that's there. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to learn in advance how to be very alert and see in seeing if this is really the right person? Do you really have a true connection with this person that goes past that rosy vision of what this person is, so that you prevent the kind of the fall after 18 months? You go, oh my goodness, this is not who I thought you were, like you said. How do we prevent that from happening in the first place, so that we are connected with our partner right off the bat, so that when the rose-colored glasses are not there anymore, that connection is still there, versus trying to now find what that connection is?
Such a great question. And my answer is really twofold on that. One is that there's nothing that helps us learn how to do conscious partnership like looking at our unconscious patterns in relationship. It's like we have to embrace the polarity that if we do want conscious partnership, as opposed to unconscious partnership where trauma and drama run the show, we're also embracing that there's a way we have to learn how to do and start to become aware of our unconscious patterns of how we do relationship, how we do connection, how we do vulnerability, how we do awareness, how we do compassion, how we do mutual care and empathy and support. And, you know, sometimes there's what we know that we know, right? And then there's maybe what we know that we don't know. And we can bring that to the forefront of any new relationship. But then there's just the hard to digest sometimes reality that we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes we don't know what we do know. So there's the conscious, you know, part of this. And then there's the unconscious part of it. And sometimes it's literally, you know, that expression, you learn your path by walking it. It's not comfortable. It's not easy. Although I really believe that through every partnership and relationship we go through, that there's a little piece of what was unconscious that gets made more conscious. And I like to think of it kind of like, especially with my clients who are dating and really want to meet their person, like sometimes they'll ask me, well, how do I really like know what my patterns are? And how do I know how to be conscious of them? You know, somewhere along the lines of the question you're asking. And for some people, what I'll do is I'll have them take an inventory of as much as they can remember, every date they ever went on, with who, what they were attracted to, every relationship or marriage, what really, really worked, what didn't work, what that person showed them, what the biggest evolutionary lesson was, how that related to their own unconscious material, and then really begin to embody, you know, more consciousness and awareness, and that eventually creates a frequency that pairs with somebody else who's more of a match to that. So it's kind of a long, a roundabout way, but also honest way of saying, like, it can be both and there's always going to be what we don't know that we don't know, or we don't know that we know. Like, I was in relationship and married at the very end of my 20s, and then very quickly got a divorce, and had done a ton of relationship work in that time period. And when I met my husband when I was 31, I mean, felt like, wow, there's so much that I learned from that and so much that I won't repeat again. And that was true. The things that I'd learned in that prior relationship, I did not repeat again. I was very clear that I would choose somebody different. My ex-husband really did not want to do emotional deep relationship work with me. I really made that very clear to my my husband then, or, you know, he was my husband then. Like, look, I really want to be with somebody that wants to do conscious relationship, conscious partnership, conscious intimacy, conscious love, conscious sexuality. And I wanted to be respectful of the fact that both of us had, you know, skeletons in the closet that had not yet been explored in the context of a conscious partnership. There's nothing like partnership to constellate all of our skeletons. And beyond the ones that we think we have, then there's the ones that we don't know that we have, and we're feeling great, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, oh, hello. Oh my gosh, this feels yucky, this feels intense, this feels overwhelming. Like, you have a what the F moment of like, I was feeling so good and now I'm not, right? So there were so many more things that came out with this, within the safety of creating a conscious partnership with my husband, that I would never have touched before. So it's this interesting iterative process, you know, of knowing what you know and bringing that consciously forward all the time. But then inherent in that, there's a polarity of like, if we're conscious, there's going to be unconscious things that are going to come up too. Consciousness sends a signal to unconsciousness to come up to be reconciled, the same way that I believe that when we find our love, our beloved within, and then we find the beloved in the relationship realm, it's such a strong frequency of love that everything outside of love comes up to be reconciled. Like, and this was how I experienced it with my husband. You know, when we met and we fell madly, deeply in love, when we're in that rose-colored glasses cocktail of, oh my gosh, we were like, this is it, I've arrived, you know? It was like so arrogant. And I'm, you know, I do this work as well. It was like, I really had to deal with my own unconsciousness right in my face. And in that time period where that love was so deep and so strong, every former person, including my ex-husband that I had been with in the last period of time, called me and apologized and said, I'm so sorry. It was like a natural completion of all these old cycles. And I really believe that was due to the frequency of the love that we had. Everything outside of love started to get reconciled. And then it continued on into our relationship, because the container of the love that we shared was so strong and powerful that all the unloved parts was like, hello, here I am. Hello, here I am. Hello, here I am. Did you forget about me? Oh my gosh, look at this. And you know, that's the work of conscious partnership. That's the work of turning the drama and the trauma of disconnected love into soul-satisfying love, sex, and closeness.
And communication seems to be a really big part of this.
Humongous, right.
You mentioned the beloved within first. You also talked about the most common thing that couples come to you with is the emotional disconnection. How does the emotional disconnection and the beloved within connect? What I mean by that is, how much are we emotionally disconnected with ourselves when we are disconnected with our partner?
I think it's totally reflective. So if we're emotionally disconnected with our partner, how can it not be a manifestation of our own internal emotional disconnection in some form or another? It may not come out in exactly the same way. You know, sometimes things, I was just talking about this with my husband, it's like there's the initial original vulnerability, and depending on our inability or lack of internal resources to face that and hold that, it can get converted into its opposite, and then it goes sideways, and then it goes to the other side, and by the time it manifests out in the relationship, it's so far different from the source of that vulnerability. And we have a process of decoding, and unfortunately or fortunately, depending on the way you look at it, that can come out in trauma, dynamics, right? Let's not forget the root word of dynamics is dynamite. And dynamite means to blow apart. And the way I think about it is like we're blowing apart the rocks of unconsciousness into smaller rocks and smaller pebbles and even smaller pebbles and into grains of sand. And we learn how to do that rub until it becomes the jewel that it's meant to, you know, that satisfies us. And then there's no more seeking and things become really simple. But yeah, it's really hard to connect emotionally with our partner. And of course, we always choose someone whose constellation in some ways perfectly triggers ours. And it's actually so that we can do the work, hopefully, with support. Lots of layers of support are needed. So we can actually become whole in that area.
When we are dealing with a difficult partner, now I am not talking about an abusive partner, because that's a whole other category where I say, if you're with an abusive partner, the only solution is exit. That is my very strong personal opinion. So I'm not talking about abusive partners. I am referring to difficult personalities who may not want to do the work when one partner wants to do the work and the other doesn't. Is there a way for the one who does want to create this connection? Is there a way to slowly melt the walls of the difficult partner who may be resisting the work?
It's a really good question and an issue that I have dealt with a lot. So the way that I work with that is for the person who is wanting to do the work to be conscious, is for them to take 100% full responsibility for their own experience, their own triggers, and to be able to cultivate the inner space to explore what exactly is getting touched for them. 10 times out of 10, what I have seen is that it constellates an earlier dynamic conditioning where that person was wanting something and did not receive it. And of course, like we were just saying before, sometimes our deepest, most painful vulnerabilities get buried. And when they get buried, they can either be manifested in a fantasy because reality is not safe, or they can get projected outwards. And when they get projected outwards, lo and behold, we have in the position of the other person, somebody who does not want to engage with us, who does not want to do the work, who does not want to talk about it. A perfect example, my ex-husband. I chose somebody who would leave me alone. He wanted separate bedrooms. It was really hard for him to do emotional work. And one thing we can look at is, how is what's being reflected in front of me reflect part of my development sequence? So for me, I had very intrusive parents. So then I unconsciously chose somebody who would never intrude. In fact, so much so that he was at the opposite end of the spectrum where he would never come close, where he would leave me alone with all my stuff. And I felt I got to feel abandoned by him, and I got to experience all that, which was good work for me to look at. But developmentally, it was literally as much as I could tolerate, because I had felt so intruded. So developmentally, to not feel intruded was a step in the right direction. So doing our own inner work and taking full responsibility for our triggers, owning them, metabolizing them, being really courageous and honest with ourselves about what that is, putting language to it, and then having the courage to own that with our partner. We can't control our partner, but we can control how we show up. We can control the frequency that we bring to the partnership. We can control how we choose to step into vulnerability or not. We can choose how we take ownership or not. And sometimes that does really shift the relationship dynamic. And that's amazing, because the other partner can feel the frequency of how good that feels for the first partner. And the parts of them that aren't in that are like, oh, I want that. You know, we're constantly playing with polarity in relationship, love, and sex. So sometimes it doesn't impact. And if the person still finds himself choosing to be in that partnership with somebody who is not willing to do that work, there comes a point where we have to do some soul searching and be like, why are we, what part of me is still choosing to engage with a primary other that is unwilling to connect? And that's really the place I found myself in when I was, I think, 29, going through my Saturn return. I was like, this is not viable for me. I acknowledge my trauma and my wounding that created this. It is not what I choose. I've done everything I can. There is nothing else I can do. And I really believe in the principle of choice. And so at a certain point, I exercised my choice and I said, this is not working for me.
I think that is so important to acknowledge that, and that sometimes it's just a dead end, right? It's not necessarily that the other person is a bad person. It's just not the right fit for you.
Yeah.
Like you said, your ex-husband was the polar, the extreme opposite of what you had experienced with your parents, not realizing how that was totally imbalanced with what you actually needed. So it's not necessarily that we need something that is completely opposite of what we don't like. It may be just finding that right balance in between. Anything else before we go that you would like to share with our audience?
I just want to remind you, if you're listening to this and feeling like it's been really hard to do relationship and it's been a struggle, I just want to let you off the hook and say it's not your fault. If you're not getting your needs met in relationship, which is a common byproduct of emotional disconnection followed by complaint and protest and all the things we all do, it's not your fault. It's really not your fault. Society has not taught us how to do relationship really well. Most of us have less than desirable role models in that department. I think only 5 to 8% of the population grew up with secure relationship attachment. So most of us are dealing with insecure relationship attachment, whether you're more anxiously oriented or you tend to avoid things. Most people fit into one of the two. And that with multiple layers of support, people like me and like you, you know, it can be reconditioned. And you can transform the rebel of difficulty, challenge, emotional disconnection, sexless marriage, parent irreconcilable differences. Things can be dissolved and transformed into the gold underneath that. And from that, you can, I believe, I've done this, create the soul-satisfying sex, love, and closeness that you desire.
Thank you so much for listening and for being here today. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and make sure to share it with your friends. You can find the links mentioned in this episode and all of the show notes at francescaanastasi.com/podcast. And you can also find us on YouTube. Once again, thank you so much for being here today. Until next time, embrace your magnificence.